This is a Pinball News production.
All right, thank you. First of all, I'd like to thank Rob, even though he's not in the room, for, again, putting on the 31st Pinball Expo. And I also want to nominate him for sainthood for putting up with Mike Pasak for 31 shows. That is, I've only put up with him for 15, and I don't know how I've done that. To give a little background, how many here are at Expo for the first time? Just all curly, yeah. I found that I've done a couple of talks, and I would start talking about the pinball circus, and I'd get about halfway through, and I'd notice there'd be a bunch of blank stares in the audience. And it was then that I'd realized none of them had ever seen it or heard of it before, and here I am rambling on about it. So, Dave, if you would, I'm going to go ahead and cue this up. I'm going to give a short background about Python and what we're doing, but before I do that, I made the announcement that I'll go ahead and speed forward just to give you a background of what we're doing with the games. We are going to build two Whitewoods. The first one is here at the show. How many have seen the one at the show? How many have not? Dave, you haven't seen it yet. Anyway, we're building two Whitewoods. The first one is being built, almost is finished. The one that is here is practically finished. And the purpose of building that one is to build it basically like the one that was built by Williams in 1994, finished by Williams in 1994. There were two built. One, of course, is at the Pinball Hall of Fame in Las Vegas. The second one is at Ken Fidesna's house. We're building the same game as those games with one exception, and that's the snake that's in the between the flippers. That mechanism is being installed. So it's here. It is playing. The snake mechanism is working. Once we finish that one, or now that we are finishing that one, we're building a second one. That second game is going to have a lot of changes to it. A lot of those changes are what Python wanted in the game, not only when he designed it and worked on it in the 90s, but also as he envisioned it going forward and continued to work on it up until the day before he passed away. He passed away April 9th last year. The second game will have the vertical board will be moved back so that that main play field will be opened up, and you will see that it actually is pretty much a standard size play field. That's a very deep cabinet. The footprint of that cabinet is actually less than a standard pinball game. We're going to move the vertical play field back, move ring number 3 up. We're going to move ring number 2 up, and the purpose of that is right now you cannot see the thumper bumpers or anything underneath ring number 3, and the player wants to see those kind of things. We don't want a Popeye. If anybody's ever played Popeye, it's not a fun game because you cannot see it except for Phoebe. So we're going to make changes. We're going to have things that we're going to incorporate, like a interactive video that actually interacts with the ball itself. And how we're going to do that, right now the ball comes off the elephant, goes across the display, or comes across at a vertical angle to ring number 3. We're actually going to put it directly in front of the display so that we can interact the ball, so you'll have the ability to use the flippers to have characters jumping over the physical ball as it goes across the display. And we'll have other video modes like that. Then after we finish that one, that is the game that we will use to build 12 sample games. 12 sample games are hand-built games. They're not production games. These are going to be hand-built games. They're going to be small changes, not maybe with all 12, but there'll be changes from different features in one and different features in another. These are games that we want to test, sample, and get a gauge as to what the interest is in the game. If we get past those 12, if the interest is there, and we need interest for 250 games to go forward. If we got 250 games that we know that people are going to want at the price point, when we find out what it is, we'll go into production. Right now, it looks like there is the interest for that, and we hope it continues. We got to build a great game. Right now, we have a good game. We need a great game. So we have the 12 sample games. We have seven of those games reserved, primarily with the people that are working on the project and people that have helped with the project. Five of the games are still available. So at this show, we are going to allow one person to get put on the eighth slot. We're going to do that here, and we're also going to do it online. And we were trying to figure out how we're going to do that. And thinking like Python, we thought outside the box, and we've come up with a what we're going to do. We have the alphabet in a bowl here, and we're going to pull out one of the letters. And if your name starts with that letter, you're in contention. Then we will pull out another letter, and that will be the first letter of the last name. So if we pull out a J, and your name is John, you're in it. If we pull out the next letter, it's a W, and your name is John Walker, you're in contention. And we will keep pulling letters until we eliminate down to the last person. If we pull a letter Z out first, and nobody's name is Z, we put it back in and start all over again. The only issue that we have is we found that streaming online, we have a 30-second delay. So we're going to have to account for that. Now, the people that are online, the way they will enter is they go to our Facebook page, Python's Pinball Circus, and if they're on there and they already hit the like button, they're already registered, and if they're watching, then they're in it. So what they will do, if we pull out their letter, they'll just hit, I'm in. And then we'll continue until we eliminate everybody. So that's how we're going to do it. We'll do that at the end. And hopefully it'll go smooth. If it doesn't go smooth, I guess people on Pennside will have a fit. Who cares? So, yeah. So anyway, back to the project. How many here have had the opportunity to meet Python or listen to one of his seminars? So a good portion of you. So a lot of this, how many have not? Let's go through that. Okay, so a few of you, enough of you. This was Python Angelo. He originally came, or he first came to Williams and worked on Joust, the video game. He did the artwork for Joust, and this is him at the Seattle show in 2013, I believe. Standing next to his Joust, they had a row of games, both pinball and video that he worked on. Go ahead to the next. And this is Python as a small child, a toddler, and I can pretty much tell that his mother was probably already having fun with him. The next one is him as a teenager, already holding the Python snake. His birth name was Vladimir Python Angelo, or Vladimir Angelo, I'm sorry. And when he came to the U.S., he took the name Python Vladimir Angelo. Go ahead. Again, just shots of him growing up. He loved to fish. He loved to hunt. Go ahead. That's him. This is when he was working at Williams, and he was working on the Laserdisc video game Star Rider. Just some more pictures of him. Go ahead. Stop on that one for a second. This is Python probably, what would you say, Phoebe, 10 years ago? Right around then? If you look at his eyes, that's Python on a weekend. And Python on a lot of weekday nights as well. Python was, let's just say, a partying kind of person, whether he was around people or not. So, what's that? Yeah, and I'll go through the history of animal here. Go ahead. Good catch that day, I guess. That expression sort of epitomizes Python. That was him. This picture really does capture him. Go ahead. This game was the last game that he designed and that went into production. It was Chameleon Paradise, Baytech Amusements went into production with it, and his estate is still getting royalty checks off of this game. Go ahead. This is a photo of the Expo 2012. Python, how I got involved with the project was at this expo, and it was one of those, who was here or who was not here last year to hear the seminar that we gave last year? Wow, a lot of you were here last year. So you already heard the story. For those that weren't, I'm gonna go through it a little bit now. I was at the 2012 Expo, and at that time I was still in the ramp manufacturing business, and as a vendor, I'm always in the vendor hall, much like Dave is always in the seminar hall, along with Martin. For some reason, on Friday afternoon, I had to go up to the room to get something. And when I came down and I walked through the lobby in here, there was Python checking in. And Python and I knew each other, I would say casually, but he recognized me. And I walked through, and in his thick Romanian accent, he goes, "James, how you doing?" I went, "Python." I was somewhat surprised that he actually recognized me. He goes, "Oh, doing great, you know." And he goes, "You're going to come see my seminar tomorrow with Phoebe. You're going to be there." And then it was at 10 o'clock in the morning on Saturday morning. And I said, "Sure, I'll come see it." And again, I very rarely got to see seminars. But I told him I'd be there. So the next morning, around 10:15, I looked down, not at my watch. I don't wear watches like a lot of people now because of the cell phones. I looked and saw that it was 10:15. Oh, late. Oh, crap. I told Python I would go listen to the seminar. So I go into the seminar room, and Phoebe and him were talking, and Python blurts out, "And Pinball Circus will get done." And I went, "Holy crap." I didn't know that that was still in the running. And the reason it struck me was because in 2009, I purchased the assets of Illinois Pinball. And in those assets were engineer drawings and art films and tooling that Williams actually used in the original game. So after the seminar, I approached Python and told him that I had these things. He was absolutely elated. And from there, this is the conversation. This is actually the photo of the conversation we were having at that expo, talking about getting involved into the project, the Pinball Circus. So go ahead. And this is Python. So and that's at the 2013 expo, obviously. Go ahead. That's more typical Python. At the 2013 Expo, he shared a booth with us, set him up, and he had his artwork. And this is him just hauling his artwork through the vendor hall at the end of one of the evenings. Go ahead. That was us at the infamous Shorty's restaurant in Seattle, Washington. Python absolutely loves Seattle. If nobody has been to that show or been to the Seattle area, I think per capita is probably the most dense pinball population in the country. It's a absolutely fantastic area. There's restaurants like Shorty's, there's game rooms that have pinball, and it was explained to me that since it rained so much, people went indoors for entertainment, and pinball was one of the primary sources of entertainment. Go ahead. This was Python in November of 2014. This was right after he was diagnosed, and it was made, he found out he was terminal. And so he was having a meeting to put his team together to make sure that the circus was going to get done. So this was right before that, and this is the meeting. There was Mark Ritchie, Eugene Jarvis, myself, George, where's George? George Ipuri, and John Ballow, I believe, was there. He's not pictured. So this was his dream team, as he called it. I don't know how, other than the fact that I had these drawings, I fit into his dream team. I had something he wanted, I guess. I don't know. Go ahead. This was Python's apartment. Now we come to Animal. This is how it was laid out. This is Python's world, part of his world, if you want to call it that. And there's Animal. The story behind Animal, don't know where he got Animal. But Animal was in his apartment, and basically he was his friend in the apartment. Animal has witnessed some things that animals should never witness, let's just say. So Animal was, I think, his closest friend. I don't know. Animal was there the whole time, also plotting and planning with the circus. And go ahead to the next one. This was the view from his apartment in downtown Chicago. Go ahead. I just threw this in there in case somebody recognizes who this was. Walking off into the sunset, I don't know. Walking off the cliff, I don't know. Go ahead. This was Python. I actually have video of this particular event. This is the elephant that is in pinball circuses, and this is the Lolita. And he was just making a little, he was putting Lolita in, and he was trimming her up and doing her hair and just being very meticulous about it, and then talking about how the elephant worked, et cetera, et cetera. So this was one of the very early stages of after he was diagnosed, and he had his last chemo, thus the hairstyle, and he was still in great spirits. Go ahead. This is George. George is our CAD guy. He does all our CAD drawings and et cetera, et cetera. And George, I inherited George from Python. I inherited George from Python. After George passed away, George moved down to Atlanta, and he's actually living at my house and doing some of the artwork and doing the CAD drawings. So he's still on the team. Go ahead. This was a mealtime at Python's at probably 3 o'clock in the morning. Python's schedule was he would tell us that we would be getting up early. We've got to get up early. We've got a lot to do tomorrow. So we would get up. Paul Kieferd was there. George would be there sometimes. We would get up. We've got to get up at 9 o'clock. So we would be there at 9 o'clock in the morning. Python's door would be closed, and Python would be asleep. By noon, we were sitting around going, well, I thought we were getting an early start. 1 o'clock, we're still wondering, but at this time we're wondering, should we find out if he's still breathing? We don't know. By 2 o'clock, 2:30, Python would roll out of the room going, hey, what's going on? What time is it? Yeah, it's 2:30, Python. Holy crap! So he would sort of say, well, we got to get something to eat. So about 3:30, he would eat breakfast. He would talk about what we had to do. We had to get started. To cut to the chase, we usually got started about 11 p.m. And we had not eaten because his schedule was he had already eaten breakfast. So by 2 o'clock in the morning, I was grabbing the mac and cheese, and that was my dinner at 2, 3 o'clock in the morning. Then we get to sleep at 5 o'clock in the morning, and Python telling us, we've got to get an early start tomorrow. So, go ahead. This was him 2 weeks before he passed away. He was still working at his work table. There's Animal in the background. This was after the photo, I believe. So, go to the next one. This was on January 22nd. I was at Python's apartment visiting and working on the game. And it was Tuesday evening, and Wednesday morning I was to leave and drive back to Atlanta. When I got up Wednesday evening, or Wednesday morning, Python was not in his room, and he was in his kitchen, and he was slumped over on a stool. And so I called the ambulance, and they took him to the hospital. And as it turned out, he had messed up his medications, and he quit taking steroids abruptly. So we thought it might have been the end, but it turned out it wasn't. But when we found out he was in the hospital, at first they told us it was the end. So thanks to Charlie at Spooky Pinball, we rushed to get the first Whitewoods cut for the Pinball Circus because we wanted him to see something physical and tangible if it was his final day. And so we rushed to get these games there. So this is when we presented him with the first Whitewoods of Pinball Circus, and this would have been January. He went into the hospital January 22nd, and this was January 30th, I believe. And fortunately, he recovered enough to go back home, and when he went back home, he continued to work. Go ahead. I think the next one's still in the... Yeah, that's the photo of him with the play fields. He got out of the hospital, and he proclaimed that it was the best day of his life. It was not only that we came by with the play fields, but he was also presented with his Hall of Fame plaque. I think Greg Ferris, John Trudeau, and Steve Ritchie had come by the evening before to visit him. And that in itself was an interesting story because what's that? Yeah, Mark delivered a card, yes. So, but the room with Steve, Greg, and John and Python, Steve is very hard of hearing, and Python has the accent, and it was almost as if I was the interpreter between the two, and it was actually a very... It was a very humorous evening. Go ahead. This is Python when he was back at his apartment. We had set up in that room that you saw originally with his desk and everything. They had set up his hospice bed and his hospital bed. And Python cut these masks out. And what he was wanting to do is put flippers. He was just working on a mask with flippers and pinballs and such on it. And so he was posing it with it as, of course, a wrestler. And so that was a picture that it was a lot of fun, actually, that evening. That was probably one of the brightest moments from the time that he got out of the hospital to April 9th. Go ahead. And that's Animal's reaction to that photo. Go ahead. And that's Python's reaction to Animal's reaction to the photo. And that's where Animal resided until Python passed away. And the rest of the story behind Animal was when Python passed away, this was the only thing he gave me, was Animal. So I inherited Animal. When he passed away, his sister went into his apartment and took everything, including Animal. I went to the Cook County Richard Daley building, and we filed a motion to get Animal back. So there is a document at the Cook County Courthouse that states that Uliana Kranzler must return Animal to James Laughlin. So it may be the only time in the history of Cook County Court that a stuffed animal is named in a order to be returned. So now I have Animal, and he goes around to the shows, and he goes to the car shows. When I'm not doing pinball, I'm doing Opal GTs, if anybody keeps up with me on the Facebook. Go ahead. This was Python when he decided he wanted hair again, and so he drew his own hair. This is, again, typical Python. He would just envision something or create something, and he would do it. Go ahead. And of course, he's happy about it. Go ahead. And there's Animal again, his best friend. What, did it just mess out? That might have been the end of it. So anyway, that leads us to April 8th. April 8th, I was, there we go. This was April 7th. So this was 2 days before he passed away. He was signing some of his canvas prints that he had printed up. So he was actually working up until the morning before he passed away. The morning that he passed away, he got up, and my son Leo, who is here, he and Python were friends, and Leo went up and stayed with Python for the last 2 months. His last 2 months, he was living with Python, helping the care provider who was living there as well. He needed 24-hour care, and the care provider needed 8 hours sleep, and my son is nocturnal, so he filled in those hours at night, which actually were the hours Python was awake. So he got to spend the waking hours with Python, basically. But I couldn't be more proud of what Leo did for Python in those final weeks. And this was April 8th. He signed the Whitewood Playfields, and that was not April 8th. That was April 7th as well. He signed the Whitewood Playfields, and we had those playfields in the game last year at the show. We took them out because we didn't want those signatures to get rubbed out and worn out. Now we have if you see the game now, we have the graphics, the artwork on those mini playfields. And go ahead. This was June of last year. This is after he passed away. There was about a month to 2 months we really didn't feel like doing anything. And keep in mind, we had not started putting anything together while he was still alive, because we were really taking care of him, so to speak, and going over what he wanted done more than we were working physically on the game. We were still working to get things put together, the logistics, but we had not started building anything. So on June, and we had not announced to the public what we were doing at that time. In June last year, we went to our local show, the Atlanta Pinball Show, and we announced there that we were going to be doing this project. And at that time, this is all we had. We had the clown playfield populated to this extent, and that was it. So from June of last year to today, this is the progress that we've made. So it's just been a little over a year and a half. So after that show, I started building a cabinet, which is not what I do, and I'd never done anything like it. And if you see that cabinet, I'm really proud of it, and I don't know how I did it, and I still have all my fingers. So that's me cutting out. Go ahead. That's George holding up the first panel. Go ahead. You can just sort of scan through these. I'll tell you to stop. Stop on that one. This is Jimmy Lippum. He is our programmer. Many of you probably don't know him. He was trying to get here for the show, but he's getting married on November 7th, I believe. So he just couldn't fit it into his schedule, and he truly wishes he was here. He is an absolutely fantastic programmer. My only concern with Jimmy is that somebody like Stern will find out how good he is, and I will lose him. He literally did the code on this game in a matter of 10 hours, what's in there right now. And it's actually a functioning code, and it actually has a few rule sets to it, which is remarkable. The guy, if he stays on the project, it will be a absolutely fantastic game from the programming standpoint. Go ahead. So this is as the cabinet's getting built. Go ahead, just sort of scroll through. And that's the construction crew for the cabinet part of it. More of the cabinet. I think most of these are just going to be the cabinet. There's the shell of the cabinet finished, and we were fitting the artwork to see how it was going to how we were going to make the decals so that we could make sure they were going to go on the cabinet correctly. We had to align those. That's Gizmo. He actually ran Pinball Inc. and ran the project, but unfortunately he passed away this year, so I've got six other corgi/mixed corgis, and none of those have really come forward to take over the company yet, so we're sort of rudderless at this moment. Control panel, that's when we started fitting the first white wood in there. I came up with a system to roll the play fields in and out, and if you see it, what it is, I adapted garage door rollers on a rail, and we can roll the play fields in and out, and it actually works great. So we're going to probably turn it into a beefier system, but we're going to stay with that type of a system on these games, because it really, to work on them, you can just roll that thing out and stand it up, and it's easy to do. Go ahead. So this is aligning the vertical play field. This is the play field. It comes forward into the main play field about 7 inches at this time. We want to move it back so that you can open it up. Pinball players like an open play field. They like to see the ball. They want to see the ball. And right now, the ball gets hidden way too much on this game. So we're going to move that back, and it also is going to allow us to put in more features so that we can bring the ball back to the left side of the game. Right now, it's too right-handed. The ball returns to the right side probably 70% of the game. It's got to go back to the left side. Go ahead. Again, just putting more of the play fields together as we went along. That's the play field where Python signed it in last year. Go ahead. Again, just putting more of the game together. Everything up to this point, other than Charlie's making of the play fields, everything on here has been hand-done by us. The ball guides were hand-formed by us. They were laser-cut out and then hand-formed by us. All the mechanisms were done by us. The wire forms were done. I think I've got some shots of that in here where we were doing those. Go ahead. There's George. That's when we started the wire forms. I think we should drug test George a little more often. So this is last year on our way to the expo. We stopped by Charlie's and he had the decals printed up, so we literally put the decals on at Charlie's and drove from there to the show last year. And there's Animal supervising. That's the decals fitted into it. I think Charlie's in one of these shots. There he is. So Charlie was the game for a moment. So that's after we finished everything. And this was the game as it was at Expo last year. Very basic. The only wire form we had is I cut up a wire form from another game and fit it on there so it would come off the ramp. The number two play field, the only thing that's not shown here is I took a taxi ramp and formed it around, so when it came off that number two play field, it looped around back to the left. And actually, that shot really balanced the game out a lot. So that's what made us realize we need to go back to the left. Go ahead. And, of course, the snake mechanism is in there. And that's us at the expo last year. Go ahead. And then after the expo, we came back and started making the figurines, the elephant, the Lolita, the wheel winch, as Python called her. So that's where we started putting all that together. The body of the elephant, when we were doing the talk last year, we were lamenting one of the things that we could not find was a drawing or an original body of an elephant so that we could complete the elephant. And in the audience was Greg Ferris. The next morning when I got to my booth, there was a body of an elephant along with a note from Greg Ferris. He had one of the original bodies, and he lent it to us so that we could make the bodies for our game. The head on there, actually, Steve, I thought you were gone today. I'm glad you're back. Steve Sabota has been absolutely brilliant in his help on this. He had the Elephant Head, Lolita, the Wheel Winch, Flippy, the Flippity Clown that's up on the top, and he let us use those so that we can make those particular features of the game. And without the support and the help of a lot of these people, we would be struggling to get as far as we did. And it just seems like every time that we would be struggling, somebody was able to come forward and give us what we needed to keep going. And it's been absolutely remarkable. Elephant, as we started getting the mechanism working. Then we started wire forms. This wire form up on the top, which is the simplest wire form, took 3 days to do. And we were estimating that it was going to take probably 3 months to do the wire forms. When you see the game, you'll see that it is just a spaghetti bowl of wire forms. And I really thought that was going to be the major hurdle mechanically, structurally, to get past, to get this game complete. And it turned out we got a new tool that I had never had before called a spot welder. And it is now my favorite tool. That is, if you don't have a spot welder, go to Harbor Freight and get one. They're about $160, and you will have a blast. I love that thing. Go ahead. That's George again attempting to, he's cutting towards his other hand, so he's attempting to cut his hand off is what he's actually doing right there, but that's when he was building the jigs, or I think he was building the jigs for the wire forms at that point. Go ahead. And there's the spot welder. Love that thing. I love spot welding. Go ahead. That's George. I think that's when we were attempting a different method for forming the wires, heating them up, forming them, and it actually worked very well. Go ahead. That's some of the longer ramps as we finished them. Those were taking, by the time we got to the last ramp, we were able to finish the last ramp in 3 hours. So we went from 3 days to the easiest ramp to 3 hours for one of the more difficult ramps. Go ahead. That's just one of the blueprints. I think that's for the vertical play field that I got in the 2009 purchase of Illinois Pinball's assets. That is one of the jigs that I had to create to make the tight spiral wire form on the game. So you can see I used a C-clamp, a pipe, a pair of vice grips, a tie down, and at the end of it was a weight, a pipe. I drilled it out, put these pegs in. We tightened it up, heated it up, left it, and it came out, and it just absolutely was perfect. I don't know how. So that's fitting the wire forms in, and you can also see that we're now putting plastics on the game, so that started to get a little bit more, it started to get some color to it. Go ahead. And that's the wire forms. I didn't like the silver look, because the ball sort of gets lost with all the chrome, all the shiny wire forms, so decided to paint them, and I just so happened to have some cobalt blue paint, painted them. They look good, so we've kept them that way so far. The elephant and the turn weldment that we put together to get it from the ramp over to the elephant. And it looks easy, but the elephant trunk goes in to a slot, so you have to make it where the ball drops in but it doesn't catch on the trunk when he goes up and down. Actually, it was more difficult than I thought it was going to be to make, and we did not have the drawings for that one. Go ahead. Testing it out, it was working good. Go ahead. That was the game as we had it this year at the Allentown show. So at this time we had it going up to the giraffe play field, but no further. So when you got up there, the flippers were actually not active, so it just went up there. Oh, no, I take that back. They were active. I had put a ramp going back down to this wire form, so it just looped back to the play field so that it didn't go, because we didn't have the elevator active at that time. Go ahead. And this is the game as it was at the Atlanta show, which is pretty much where it is today, except now the elevator works completely. The Lolita is now in the game and works. The dancer that spins around in the middle of the play field and the wheel winch back there is now active on our game. So mechanically, the game is complete. It is functioning. It actually functions with more features than the one in Las Vegas at this point because it does have the snake. So that's where we're at with the game at this point. Go ahead. And that's George at the show with Animal. So I think we need to drug test both of them a little more often. So I did that for you, George. So that's where we are at this point with the game. Again, our plans are we got one more Whitewood to go. Then we have 12 sample games. The difference between a sample game and a production game is the sample games are hand-built. They're going to have a few features in them that the production game might not have in them. Just like Williams did, they built the sample games, and then the bean counters would get a hold of it, and they would strip things out, make it to where it is as economically feasible to build as possible, get the BOM down. That's what the bean counters do. We will probably have to do the same thing. You don't have an unlimited BOM. Python always wanted an unlimited BOM, and unfortunately, it's just not feasible. So we're going to have to figure out how to build this thing. We do not have a price point because we cannot compare the build of this game to a standard pinball game. We can't say, well, Jersey Jack is building them and selling them at X. We should be able to. Stern is building them and selling them for X. We should be able to. We don't know. We would like to, yes. But we flat do not know. We will not know until we get to those 12 sample games. That is another reason we want to build the 12 sample games, because we will be able to figure out the BOM, figure out the cost. And at that point, we can present it. This is what the cost will be. We gauge the interest, and if the interest is there enough for 250 games to be produced, we will go into production. If the interest is not there, we will delay it and see if we can get the interest, because sometimes you got to go out and actually sell the game. We will maybe have to do that. We will do that, and if we can get there, we'll get there. If it doesn't happen, it doesn't happen. We do not take deposits. We have not taken anybody's money. This is being done on our dime. It's being done on our schedule, and it'll be done when it gets done. And the price of it, hopefully, will be in the price point that will be competitive with the rest of the pinballs that are on the market. So that wraps up where we are. I'll go ahead and take if anybody's got any questions at this point. Are we online? There's a 30-second delay, is it? So if they ask questions there, just let me know if you want. Is there any?
Someone in the chat room had a question about the drawing. They said, are there multiples of each letter for people who have the same letter at the start of their first and last names?
Oh, the drawing of the, are there what now?
Multiples of each letter, so people will have the same first and last initial.
Well, when we draw a letter, we're going to put that letter back in. So it has the possibility of, if your name is Jay Johnson, Jay Johnson will be able to be in the drawing. Actually, this is from a Scrabble game, so there's probably three or four or however many J's there are. I don't know how many points you're going to get, but go ahead, Dave.
Since your team is kind of distributed, can you tell us a little bit about how you're documenting what you do? Where is there some place where you're logging all the trial and error, or, you know, which documents are the final decision of what you're going to do, or which drawings you're using and so forth? How are you calling all that together into one body of knowledge?
Well, a lot of the game, as we're building it, we're just doing it. We're creating, we're coming up with ideas as we go along. If anybody got to see the back of the game yesterday, they got to see a new part that we've developed. Anybody get to see that? Yeah. Well, we've got a new part in there, along with a new part number. It's a Python kind of part if you've seen it. So, but as far as, I'm not sure, are you asking if there's a database or something that people can observe what we're doing? Is that what you're asking?
At the moment, the question is just, if you want to bring on a new person, or if some person couldn't do as much as they're now doing, you change the team in some way.
Oh, yeah. Well, we've changed the team a little bit since the beginning. Paul Kiefert was very prominent in the project. Now he has basically left, and Jimmy Lippum is the one that came in and replaced him. So it was an upgrade on that perspective. George, myself, that's the core of the team. There's people that come in and help, and that's what they're doing. A lot of people are just coming in and volunteering their help to do this, and pretty much all that is people that will email me or call me and say, hey, look, I can do this. Last week, there was a guy that emailed me and told me he knew a guy that knew a guy that could do dots. Dots in the program are going to really some of the most difficult things to do on this, and we are going to need help. So they volunteered to come in and help us out with that kind of stuff. So it's a lot of volunteers kind of things, which is what we need. We're financing this thing. So it's difficult to pay somebody on a full-time basis, especially myself. I'm not getting paid. So go ahead.
Is the computer hardware the FAST system?
Now, the system that we're using on the first one is the Ben Heck board, which is the same board system that's in the Spooky pinball. We're going to look at another board system for the next one because we want to test a couple of them to see which one actually performs the best. We're having troubles with the Ben Heck board. I don't know if it's that board or if it's us, but we're having trouble with switches not acting as you hit them. It doesn't seem like the processor reacts fast enough. The debounce circuit or programming in there, maybe we have to adjust that. We don't know. We're still going to experiment around with it. We're going to experiment with at least one more board system to see which one works best. There are right now 12 optos in this game and 2 proximity sensors. That's another thing that the Ben Heck board is really not set up to support. So we had to adapt a Williams 16 opto game. We had to modify it to get the game to run 12 optos. Go ahead.
What I'm interested in is you're going to sell this game, and of course you want it to be very successful. What was Python's philosophy of the game, and where do you see user input either contradicting him or playing with him to change the game from its original conception?
Are you talking about the game as far as the design of the game itself?
I assume he had a vision that he articulated to you, like what was the flow, what was the rule set, and all these things.
Oh, yes. Working with
maybe
Python.
Maybe you could discuss that.
When we were working with Python, I took 22 trips to Chicago last year from Atlanta. So I was living here more than I was in Atlanta the last months of his life, starting in November of 2013. We went over the game, and he would come up with ideas. We would throw ideas off of each other. John Ballow was involved. There's another member of our team, John Ballow. He does the sculpturing for us. He does the scans and the sculpturing. I left him out, and I apologize for that. So when we worked with Python, he gave us the features he wanted us to test, like the interactive display. He says, test them, see if they work. If they work, leave them in. If they don't work, take them out. The day before he passed away, he told me, I've left it with you. I trust you to do with it as you see fit, and I trust you to build the game that is worthy of my name. So he left it with us. So we do have the ability to make changes within the parameters of the game to make it the great game that is deserving of what he wanted it to be. So we've got the works that we have with him. A lot of it is stuff that try this, and if this doesn't work, try that kind of stuff. So we'll try this and then try that. The idea of going back to the left side of the playfield is something that we talked about, but we didn't talk about how we were going to get a shot to go back to the left of the playfield. So that's something he basically said, figure it out. And so there's going to be things that we have to come up with. And to be honest, I'm not a pinball designer. I'm not one that's going to stand up here and tell you I know how to design a great pinball game. But we are talking with a designer from the past that we are going to try to get on board to help us go to that next phase. So that's another thing that we're looking at doing. Unfortunately, we can't make that announcement today. So,
what time is it?
What time is it?
10 after.
10 after.
Oh my God, we're already running late. Well, we got started late. Do I get a few more minutes? It's David's fault. I've just been told that we're actually running a little bit late, so I better get to this giveaway. Now, we got to keep in mind that online there is a delay of 30 seconds, which is going to get a little boring because we're going to have to go do-do-do-do. Anybody out there? Anybody out there? So if anybody that is listening online that wants to be part of this drawing, Phoebe, you want to come up and do the drawing? I'm going to put her on stage. She loves that kind of stuff. What we're going to do is draw out a letter. And anybody here, if their first name starts with that letter, if you don't mind, just stand up. That way we can, instead of holding your hand up for 30 seconds or however long it takes for us to get a feel for whether or not the... Mark wanted me to remind everybody that we are not giving away a game. We're giving away a spot to purchase that game. So just to make sure. Yeah, Rob, sorry. And once you get this spot, you will be number 8 in line on those 12 sample games. If you decide you don't want to buy a sample game, you can give it away. You could sell it. It's yours to do with as you please. I'm never one that says once we sell something to somebody or give something to somebody, we still have control of it. No, it's yours. So if you get it and you find somebody is willing to pay you $1,000 for that spot, sell it to them. But also let us know if there was somebody else willing to pay money for it, because we might sell one of the other spots. I don't know. So the people online, if you want to be involved, you have to go to our Facebook page, Python's Pinball Circus. So when we draw a letter, you also must hit the like button so that we can confirm this is your name. I don't want some guy on Facebook that goes, when we pull a Z out, he says, my name is Zerblis, and he's really not. So you have to hit the like first so that we can confirm that's who you are. So Phoebe will pull out a letter, and if there's nobody if we do pull a Z out and nobody has that letter for their first name, then we'll pull another one out. Go ahead, Phoebe. Any questions on that? Good. All right. Oh, this one's actually going to be more than one, I'm sure. First letter is T. Anybody here with the first name T? One, two. All right. If anybody is online with the first letter T, go to the Facebook page and in the post, just put yes. First name. First name only. So we have how many here? Two? What's your last name? So we got a C and an L. So far, nothing online. Let's make sure we're past the 30-second mark. Doesn't look like it. So we're down to two already. Go ahead, Phoebe. We need a L or a C. This is either a number one or an I. Nah. Next. This could take a minute. All right. And why ain't your name Smith? We could be done by now.
My name's Smith.
Oh, well. A, nup. Y, nup.
A
again? How many A's are in there? Anybody play Scrabble? How many A's are in there? Another I, another A, another E, N. There's no C's in here?
What do we need?
We need a C
or an L.
An E. An S, an E, an I, H, you suck. Wait a minute. Let me see what kind of letters I got. O, M, Python, your idea is not, it's going slow here. Nope. Is that an R? Mm-hmm. Maybe we should count it. Maybe that's a small L. Go ahead. X, E, K. No looking. T, L. We got the winner. What was your name again? All right, see me after the show. Okay, we're running late. Do we have time for any questions, Rob, or are we done? Okay, one question if there is one out there. Anybody? Did we have any online? One question. One last one.
You said that the lower limit for production was 250. Is there an upper limit? Is there a plan to cut them off?
No. If we plan, if there's interest in 1,000 games, we would plan to build 1,000 games. And while building 1,000 games, if we had interest in more, we would continue to make them. We're not going to proclaim a limited run. We're not going to proclaim if you don't get in now, you won't get in at all. We don't do that. So anyway, thank you very much. And if you could just come over and play the game and let us know how it plays for you. Thank you.